Session number 17772.
Reihan then Reel 6.
Right. And I appeal to the Flags and Banner to give me a little time space in which to try to get this money together. And in addition to that, the accessories that he had obtained from our national body hadn't been paid for. So fortunately, the Flags and Banners extended me a two-year grace in which for me to find the money. The accessories, I had a very good friend on the committee, a boy from Exeter, and he said, "Roy, don't worry about the accessories, here's the check," he said, "and if you can repay me at any time, that will do, but if you can't, so be it." So that was how I was able to pay the National Executive for the accessories that we had obtained. And then when we came to look at the finances, of course, there was nothing there. The next thing that we knew, we had a visit at a committee meeting of the CID from Newton Abbott Police Station investigating what they considered to be fraud, which I suppose, not to put too fine edge on it, was not intentional fraud, but to them, it was. But before the man concerned could be brought before the police, he unfortunately put himself under a 125 train at Newton Abbott Station and killed himself. So that, as far as the police were concerned, had to be the finish of that. But the secretary and I then got our heads together. We got a few collecting tins from somewhere, a few volunteers from somewhere, and away we went out into the highways and byways, gathering in what funds we could. And inside the 2 years, we had paid the debt, repaid the member of Exeter for his check with the accessories, and we began looking at a balance. It took hard work. It meant that we had to be out on the streets, and of course we had to get to the authorities to get the necessary permission for these collections to be made. But evidently we had told the right story and the sympathy was extended to us, and we were away from there.
What do you think his motivation was for conducting such a fantasy?
Well, I think that there are people like this. I don't know exactly what the name. You can't say mad. You can't say that. It's just something that's within the person. When I was doing my insurance, I called on the next door neighbour to this man. And he said, "Roy," he said, "what's going on?" He said, "So-and-so is in there. He's got this cassette on, military music." And when I looked in the window, he was marching up and down with his green beret on and evidently on parade. It was an obsession. An obsession.
You feel he was deluded?
Deluded. He evidently it must have either read or... perhaps he's in the film, The Longest Day, or something. And who knows? No, we never got to the bottom of that. But all we know was that there were some remarkable stories told. And there was the case of our secretary. And, we could smile and laugh at this sort of thing, but it was very real to us at the time, that we were actually expecting a call from Las Vegas of Tom Jones, who was going to sponsor us. I mean, it's remarkable, and we believed it.
And the secretary was waiting for the call?
Yeah.
In the middle of the night?
Middle of the night.
Because he'd been told by the chairman?
Remarkable. Yeah. How naive. But he was so convincing.
But didn't that tell you that there was something fishy when Tom Jones did not
fill. Oh yes, we started that for and this is why we accepted immediately when his brother arrived and told us. We accepted that immediately, except for the few who were very dedicated to him. But
so he wasn't doing it for the money?
No, simply for grandeurs or whatever you like to call it. And of course that is a remarkable final story of that, that when you think that when we did do the 40th anniversary on the ferry boat off our manse, the Bishop of Plymouth actually conducted a ceremony whereby the ashes were placed into the sea.
Whose ashes?
Of the chairman. Of the ex-chairman.
So he was held in some respect?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and we attended the ceremony.
How do you feel today about having taken part in the Second World War?
I wonder if delusion is too strong a word. It might be. I see the story, I collect old times. Wherever the collection is, I'm there. I see the attitudes. My own generation are with me. Maybe the generation back, still there. I see the youngsters go along with an air of indifference. The last collection, which was at Safeways at Totnes, quite a youngsters were coming out, and one of the youngsters with that sort of look on their faces that they sometimes have you won the war yet? So I simply replied yes, because I don't get caught up with this. I wouldn't argue at all. I do think that the younger generation would more relate to the Gulf, to Falklands, than what they would there. This is a past memory, and to them it's irrelevant. I would say that. The nearest perhaps I could get would be the school children. My wife and I were invited by the headmaster where our grandchild attended school at a little village called Stoke in the country. And we were asked to come along to give our answer questions. Not to give overviews, to answer questions on how I felt as a soldier of the World War II and how my wife felt as a civilian of World War II. And they were very penetrating questions, very good questions. And I knew full well one question that was going to be asked, and the little boy was itching to say it. Did you kill any Germans? So the reply was there ready. I said, can I give you an example of how I'm going to answer you? I said, do you know an aeroplane going on? And these aeroplanes have bombs that bomb certain places. I said, that man up in that aeroplane, he presses a button, the bomb comes down, and he kills people. But I said, he doesn't know. Because all he said was send the bomb down. I said, now me, I've got a brain gun that fires several rounds, and I see a situation and I fire. But I don't know if I have killed anyone. So I can't answer your question. I don't know.
But did you fire a brain gun very often
yes,
in the war?
Yes, we had brain guns. Yeah. But I said, I don't know whether I did or whether I didn't, so I just can't answer your question. And I think he accepted that answer. But, of course, what he wanted to know, he wanted the glory of war, which would have been a very, very wrong thing, because there is no glory. There's no winners. Nobody wins.
Sometimes people say to me, how accurate do you think that these memories are that we collect. Do you think that your memories are accurate that you've told me about?
Yes. Yeah. It was how it was at that time. How it relates to modern day, that's another matter, and that. I will admit to you that there are times when I feel a little bit uncomfortable at some of the reminiscences that I've got to listen to, because I truthfully don't want to listen to it, and that's the truth. We have a job to do here in looking after our widows and people who are, if I may say, lonely. We have just completed our Christmas task, and that is that we send ampers to widowers and to people in need. Some would prefer not to have the ampers, but would prefer cash, so I send a £20 cheque. And this has been done. We had a wonderful collection. Our patron is Jim Davison, and he allows us to collect at the Princess Theatre. He does a show, and he gives us a nice little plug at the end. He said, I've got some friends outside. He gives them a little story of the D-Day, and he said, they're good boys, they're friends of mine. I want you to support them, and they do. Now, with that money, I gave the Normandy veterans here a Christmas lunch at the hotel that we use as our headquarters. They had afternoon tea afterwards, they had entertainment put on, and the cost was just over 1,600, which was from the proceeds of the collections.
But what are these memories that you wouldn't you would prefer not to hear?
Well, you know, some of the boys, they come up, I remember, you know, so and so, and I don't really want to listen to it, because I think I go back to our major standing looking at the vehicles out there in Palestine, and like you said, some people are sinned for whatever they do and some aren't. I think of those that weren't sin, that did perhaps heroic things, and I know that people did, but they weren't sin.
They weren't what?
Sin. They weren't sinned by anyone. But I don't like the boasting. See, I had this driven home to me. We had at the ceremony of the commemorating stone, when the interviewer interviewed us on radio, he selected out, and one of the lads was very friendly with an Air Force man of Newton Abbott who was a pilot and who was captured, and he escaped and worked with the Macquarie for a time, for which he received a medal from the Macquarie, and he had replicas made, and he gave one to this particular man because he was an acquaintance, see? And he was wearing this badge, and the interviewer asked him, well, what's this badge, oh, it's a Macquarie, oh, terrible, you know what they went through, and almost leaving the assumption that he was part of that, which of course he wasn't in any way. And those are the sort of things that I don't care for. I did have a really remarkable. I had a boy that had heard of our existence, and he came here, lived in this town. He came here, said, "I want to know what it's all about, Mr. Hamlin." He said, "Because I was there, I was the Navy." He said, "And me and my mate, we had a small boat. And have you heard of a place called Garromance?" Well, I said, yeah, I've heard of it. Well, he said, we came with our boat and we had our cannon on boat. And he said, we cleared that beach in half an hour with our cannon. I said, did you? Yeah, the two of us. Well, I thought, remarkable. He said, you remember there's a spire in our old man's? He said, there's a cello. He said, I put that one in there. And I thought to myself, I don't want him as a member, definitely. But that actually was said here in this room. Can you imagine? I mean, what possesses people to say things like that? Me and my mate cleared that beach in half an hour with that one cannon.